This is a DC Superpowers Podcast Special Edition.
Hey, super friends. Welcome to a special edition of the DC Superpowers Podcast. We lost a legend in the passing of Stan Lee.
I said one of the biggest.
Though he did write some DC books, he wrote mostly for Marvel, and he was basically created Marvel Comics.
Oh, yeah.
So, but our buddy Seth Zillman from the Geekville podcast actually invited Vernon and I and our my other co-host Kylan from Geek Watch 1 and from Mighty Marvel Geeks onto the show to just give some of our memories and such of Stan.
We, like I said, this has been a sad week. It's one of those things we knew it was going to happen, but we weren't ready for when it happened. But there's so many good things that he left. It's sad because we'll miss him, but he has a lifetime worth of memories for us to talk about. I look around my room and I have a lot of DC toys, but for right now, the ones that I know Stan Lee made for Marvel, they're strolled around everywhere. And it's one of those things that's refreshing because when I get older, my kids, they'll be able to remember these things. When my mom knew who Stan Lee was, passed it down to me. So it's he's going to have a legacy. He's immortal because of that.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't Stan the man for nothing.
Seriously.
Super friends, we'll be back next week with another regular DC Superpowers episode. But at this point, I think we're just going to hand it over to Seth with Geekville Radio.
Geekville Radio.
Well, it's with a heavy heart that we begin this episode of Geeko Radio. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, geeks and geekettes. This is Seth, a.k.a. Xandrax, the mayor of Geekville, and the host of Geeko Radio. We're going to be all ready to do a standard episode talking, you know, movies, games, and such as we usually do here. But alas, we were all disheartened at the news of the passing of the late, great Stan the Man Lee, the running force behind Marvel Comics for all those decades. You really can't say enough about him, but fortunately I don't have to talk about Stan Lee alone, although I think myself or just about any other reasonable geek could. And joining me for this episode, we may get Crazy Train later on. I know he said he wanted to take part in this episode as well, but joining me from suburban Ohio, we've actually touched base a couple times before on previous shows, Mr. Ken Rose. We were supposed to meet up at Con on the Cob, but unfortunately it didn't turn out to happen. That was my fault, so I do apologize, but I hope things are going well up there in Ohio.
Yeah, Con on the Cob was fantastic this year. Unfortunately, we had the news of Stan Lee's passing the day after, but and we missed having you out here, man, but this is going to be an interesting show.
So we have joining us as well, kind of your partner in crime, so to speak, on the Geek Watch One cast, and also your DC Superpowers tag partner, right?
Well, one of them, yeah, the one is from Geek Watch One and the Mighty Marvel Geeks. That's my buddy here, Kylan.
Hey. Say hi, Kylan. What's up?
And then, as
Kylan, I think this is the first time we've done a show at the same time, right? I mean, I know we've touched base a lot, but I think it's the first time we've actually done any shows together, right?
I think so. I mean, for some reason, I kept thinking that we had done one. Had you shown up on Weeby Geeks at any point?
You know, we may have shared a mic the first Con on the Cob that we went to, and we were like talking about Star Trek or something like that, and we were doing it
yes.
all up.
We did.
Yeah. Maybe one of those Podcast 101 panels.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that was it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I know... last but not least, joining us here, I know this is the first time we've done any show together. We met a couple years ago at a Con on the Cob. I know your first name. I don't know your last name. Your first name is Vernon. So, Vernon, please introduce yourself.
I'll take that. It's Vernon from DC Superpowers Podcast, Ken's partner in crime. This was really sad. I know we're doing a DC podcast usually every week, but Stan Lee was like so good. Everyone in the comic world, nerd world, pop culture universe, we miss him. He's going to be missed. We're going to miss seeing his face on the big screen, but we'll figure out how they're going to set that up. Disney does have the company, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll kind of start out with, I hate to say the norm, but obviously we've all been comic fans most of our lives, but I really didn't kind of put the two and two together until probably the mid-80s when I would have been around junior high, as far as the length or the amount of contributions that Stan had. So, Ken, I guess I'll start with you. I guess the first Marvel comics that you would have read, I know for me, I started out with G.I. Joe and Transformers, and then I kind of went into the Marvel superheroes after that. But did you have any titles that you knew growing up, or, you know, because when we were growing up, Stan had already become the publisher. He really wasn't doing much writing.
Well, the way I got introduced to Stan was I never really read much Marvel. I mean, I've read some since then, but I've always been a DC kid. But what introduced me to my earliest superhero memories are the Super Friends and Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And that's where I learned who this guy named Stan Lee is, because he was the narrator for Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And from there, you learn, wait a minute, this guy actually runs the entire company.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kylan, what about you? Is it a similar story with you and Stan, or?
Oh, no. I've been reading Marvel ever since, I don't know, 75, 76. I started off with Submariner, Fantastic Four. In fact, my mom actually would buy me subscriptions to Spider-Man and Fantastic Four. So I look forward to getting, you know, that book in the mail every month. And I would read Stan's Soapbox and the Bullpen Bulletin. So I would get to I was sort of like an insider to all the things that were going on in Marvel. And I remember growing up looking back on it now, it was a terrible, terrible show, but it's a live action Spider-Man. Loved watching Incredible Hulk. I loved the animated Spider-Man series along with Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And also along that time, there was another animated Hulk series, Fantastic Four and Spider-Woman. So I was like, you know, he was Stan, you know, people called him Stan the Man, but I kind of started calling him Uncle Stan. Like even now I call him Uncle Stan. So he was an integral part of me, of my childhood on. So Stan has always been there for me.
Okay, Vern, you get the last word to start things off here.
Growing up in the 90s, as Kylan was saying, that animated Spider-Man series that came out in the 90s, Saturday morning cartoons was my thing. I think it was the season finale of the whole show. It was like the Spider-Verse. They even were doing it back then, and there was these different realities of Spider-Man. And one of the Spider-Men that came into the show was saying, I'm just the actor that plays you guys. Like, I'm just the real-life guy. It's like, my world, you're made up, but I'm just an actor. And our main universe Spider-Man for the show was like, you know what? I want to see the guy that made me in this different world. And he goes to New York and he flies the actor or swings the actor on his back, and they head to Marvel headquarters. And in cartoon form, you saw Stan Lee, and he was like, wow, you're my greatest creation. You can't be real. He's like, I must be dreaming. Then he swings him around and tells him about his world. He's like, wow, I can't believe I made this universe and you actually exist. That was my first time really getting to know like Stan Lee as a Stan the Man. And from there on, every time I saw him in magazines, comics, TV, movies, his voice just reconciled with me. Every time I heard him, I knew who he was. And that's how I grew up with him, with Spider-Man. And, of course, that was his favorite character. So, Stan Lee left a big impact on me as a kid from the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I know I had met Stan, it was August of 1998, I want to say. It was, I think it's back to being called the Chicago Comic Con now, but it was Wizard World Chicago at the time. And Stan was one of the guests of honor, and he was just signing comics. And I know I'm going to show my geek card a little bit here, but I had a copy of Spider-Man 129. And anybody who knows the history of Spider-Man is that's the first appearance of the Punisher. So that was what I brought for Stan to sign. So that's kind of my, you know, whatever you call it, geek ruler or, you know, whatever ego you want to say, is I got the first Punisher appearance autographed by Stan Lee. But I could also remember that 1998, so that would have been 20 years ago, so he would have been approximately 75 years old. He definitely had a young man's handshake when he when he shook my hand. And it was kind of funny because my friend and I were wearing NWO shirts, so we kind of had to try to explain the NWO to Stan Lee, which was kind of odd. But did you guys ever meet Stan at any point in your lives, even if it was just for a signing or a handshake or something?
I wish I could have met him.
I was in a panel at Dragon Con with him. I think it was about maybe 3 years ago. And so, you know, it was one of the big panel rooms. So I got to be in the same room with him. I didn't get to shake his hand. But still, you know, to share a space with him, you know, 5-year-old Kylan was doing backflips because, you know, he was one of my heroes. So I didn't get to have a one-on-one with him, but I felt like what I got was enough.
Yeah, yeah. You got to spend that amount of time with, you know, the Maker effectively, right?
Yes. Yeah, man.
Wow. Yeah. The only other thing that I could bring up about seeing Stan in person do something was a year or two ago at C2E2. He did a panel with Frank Miller.
And, I heard about that one.
Yeah, and it was pretty funny because obviously Stan, with his age and such, you know, he was having trouble hearing things here and there, but boy, could he roast. He was grilling Frank left and right, and Frank would kind of toss it right back. And, you know, Frank would be talking about how he was reading Hulk as a kid in the 60s. And he said, you know, they made the Hulk gray, and then all of a sudden I opened up an issue and the Hulk's green, and I'm like, what the hell's going on here? So the host said, so Stan, why did you make the Hulk green? And Stan, just without missing a beat, says, because I knew somewhere it was going to piss Frank Miller off.
he was quick-witted.
A proper recording of that, but alas, you know.
Yeah, I heard he was really quick-witted whenever it came to those cons. He just snapped. He had something to say right back.
Right.
A couple years ago, it was the first year of, Hall of Fame CityCon, which is a comic book convention down in Canton. And Jim Steranko was there. So now I'm a huge Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D. fan. So, you know, how many times do I get an opportunity to meet the man? So I got to meet him. And he told the story because apparently, I guess, the woman that he was dating, I believe she was like the secretary to Stan and said that, Jim is famous for like these almost movie poster style panels, right?
Covers and such.
Covers and everything, right? So, you know, he was doing these style covers and so he was told, you know, and he said to the editor, and I'm thinking that it hadn't been Stan. He says, why are you doing this crap? Nobody would buy this. So, you know, go change it. Nobody wants this, right? And so he's like, well, okay, fine, whatever. So he started doing the covers like pretty much everybody else is doing covers. But then what he decided to do was kind of take liberty with the, you know, with the interior and kind of would do this type of art in the splash pages, right? And he said that all of a sudden started to get all these letters, and his girlfriend tells him, you know, Jim, you're getting all these fan letters. They really said, yeah, because she was, she was the one that would, you know, get all the mail. And so she would know, so she could tell him, she knew which artist was getting what and what kind of buzz and that sort of thing. And so all of a sudden he started getting noticed and the fans are loving the work. Next thing you know, he gets called into the editor's office. He says, oh crap, what did I do? He says, you remember those covers I told you to not do? He says, yeah. Well, I want you to start doing them. He's like, well, okay. So I think I can hear Stan doing, you know, because Stan, One thing I always noticed in the Marvel books was Stan almost had, like, he had his finger on the pulse of the Marvel fans, you know?
Yeah.
And he wanted to make sure that whatever that Marvel was giving to them, what they wanted and more, and also what they needed, you know? And so I could see him. I could see him at first, like, nobody wants this. Nobody wants this. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, oh, we're loving this stuff. And they, oh, well, you know, I could be wrong. So, yeah. So,
and his wife helped him with that one. I think that story, because there's a tie in there, because he was, I think he was, like, going to get fired soon or laid off or something like that. And then his last book he was going to write, I think it was something with the Fantastic Four. And he was like, I don't want to do this. They might tell me no. I'm going to leave anyway. And they're probably going to turn me down for this. And she said, well, Stan, if they're going to fire you anyway, might as well just do what you want to do, not what they want. Because they were telling him to put in all this other crap you don't have anything for, and fans weren't going to like that. So he said, let me just come up with something new. Made the Fantastic Four, and that's when it was flying off the shelves. And they're like, we're going to keep you.
Yeah, he did tell the story during that thing with Frank Miller, where, and I'd heard more or less the story before, but it obviously Stan tells it better, but there was that amazing fantasy, because in the 60s and even before, there were those comics that were essentially, what would the word be?
Anthologies?
Anthology type things. Yeah, where it would have self-contained stories that might not even have the same characters from issue to issue. They just might have, you know, three different short stories in them. And that's, of course, where Spider-Man came along, because Stan had the idea of Spider-Man, you know, because he just thought, like, Bug-Man or Ant-Man or whatever just didn't send. Of course, obviously there was an Ant-Man later, but he had to fight a little bit to try to get Spider-Man, but Amazing Fantasy was getting canceled anyway. So the publisher at the time said, oh, okay, just put in the Spider-Man thing in it. And then lo and behold, it was a huge hit. And I think that really is what got, you know, his foot in the door. Obviously, is not the proper thing, because he'd already been working at Comic since the 30s. But I think that's really where he seemed to get more of the
recognition,
main writing duties, I think. I don't know. That's my words, not somebody else's. But I think that seems to be kind of Spider-Man being the big hit, I think, is really what kind of got him noticed as far as his writing.
Well, really, you could almost...
Oh, go ahead.
I think Kylan kind of hit it on the nail on the head earlier. Like, Stan started in the 40s writing comic books and working in the comics industry. But you notice that he didn't make a huge splash until the early 60s. Well, so he had actually taken all that time of seeing the Golden Age and seeing the Golden Age die, and the Silver Age start to come up a little bit in the 50s. But he recognized, I think he saw what the culture was looking for. He saw what was going on and said, you know what? And if you look, there's a giant shift in comics around the early 60s. Right. About when Marvel's took off with Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four and stuff. And I think you cannot understate that if Stan Lee hadn't stepped in the early 60s with the idea, with the changes he made. And when did Marvel actually start, actually become Marvel, Kylan? Do you know?
I believe it was 61, I think.
I think it was 61. I got a book over here, but I believe it was like 61.
Yeah, I got the Marvel Encyclopedia.
I remember in 86, there were those issues for that matched the month of the 25th anniversary that had like the big, you had like a close-up of whoever was one of the main characters in the title, and then there was all around these crowdings of other Marvel titles. Of course, now Marvel's trying to say they're 75 years old, but, you know.
Well, that's, the company has been around that long. They just renamed themselves.
Yeah, they were around for like 79 years if you go with Timely, but Marvel, you guys are right, was 61. Okay. And they actually became what we know it is today.
But with the creation of Marvel Comics, Stan Lee figured out what people wanted. And then DC jumped on right after that, pretty much. And then the battle really started. Because you got to think of the Golden Age. Yeah. The only one that survived in its original incarnation, really, is DC. And a lot of that, I think, is Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. Basically, the three of them ran forever. You can't. Those are behemoths. But Stan Lee, as a writer, when he teamed up with guys like Kirby and Ditko, they were unstoppable in the 60s.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the other thing was Stan brought a degree of humanity to the characters, because Peter Parker was a big nerd at a time when it wasn't cool to be a nerd. And how many of us, how many teenage boys or help people, period, have that moment where they feel like an outsider?
Oh, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. And
my life.
But then, you know,
all of us can speak for that thing.
But then life gives you this amazing gift that's born out of tragedy, and then you're given this mandate that with great power comes great responsibility, you know. Or you look at something like the X-Men especially during a time where there was so much social strife going on, and you have Dr. King and Malcolm X, mm-hmm. which becomes Professor Xavier and Magneto, and maybe America wasn't ready to directly talk about, you know, racial tension or gender issues or whatnot, but they could talk about, you know, how mutants are treated, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. There was, like, really, when you think about it, Marvel, because of Stan Lee and Ditko and Steranko and all those greats, Marvel was doing very progressive things, right. That, I mean, you weren't getting that on television. You weren't really getting that on the radio or in movies, you know. And how many people would expect to have that level of social commentary in a comic book? And it continued. You know, I look back on and I'll be honest with you. When I was growing up in the South in the 70s, you know, I was told, you know, you don't associate with those people. Those people don't associate with you. But I opened up a comic, and Captain America and Falcon are best friends, and they're fighting crime. And Luke Cage and Iron Fist, they're best friends. They're fighting crime, and Iron Fist is in a relationship with Misty Knight, and it's treated like a real relationship. It's not treated as comic relief like you get on the Jeffersons. So it was weird. Like, I actually paid more attention to what I was learning from the comics than what I saw on TV, because in a way that kind of mirrored my life more, because I could relate to those people, you know. And yeah, you know, looking back on it, Stan Lee, he really put himself out there, because, you know, that was either going to be a huge success or a total failure, you know. But he took a gamble, and look at us now, you know.
And he did the same thing with Daredevil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like we're talking about with the X-Men. He was trying to show the diversity in that around the civil rights movement. And he was like, I don't know if it might work, it might not, but this is where I'm going to go for it. And it worked when he was making Daredevil. I remember watching like a bonus feature on the Daredevil DVD with Ben Affleck. Yes, I watched that. I have that. special features were really interesting, because he said he was worried. He knew where his heart was coming from. He said he's going to make a combo character of a blind man. And he said, oh, wait a minute. I hope no one gets offended, because it's a blind character and he don't know if they'll take offense. So like, I can't do that. So he was like, we're going to put it out there, but I hope they get my meaning. And it did. It was a big hit, too, because it was like he was showing no matter what problems you're going through, no matter what you're born with, not born with, something happens to you, someone's going through it no matter what. But it's how are you going to handle it, and how are you going to overcome it? And people can relate to that. For me, as you say, it was Spider-Man. Yeah. I was a skinny little nerd going through school, and I could just relate to Spider-Man. For one, he was young. And two, mm-hmm. he wasn't a big guy. You always seen people like Superman, Batman, the Hulk, Daredevil. These guys got that big buff physique and the toned physique. But Spider-Man was like a smaller guy. I'm like, I can relate to this. So, yeah, Stan Lee, no matter what character he had, someone could relate to somebody always, even female characters. He paved the big way for them, too.
There are a few things. I mean, I can count at least three or four things, certainly three, that Stan kind of brought to the table as a storyteller. I mean, you know, you touched on the X-Men. Obviously, the whole mutant struggle depicted in the X-Men was commentary on civil rights issues. And Professor Xavier was essentially Dr. Martin Luther King, and Magneto was Malcolm X. That basically comes right from Stan's mouth there. Another thing that he did is he gave us what I think a lot of other people like to call the flawed hero. You know, the characters like Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, you can't really say they're perfect per se, but they can, they're so powerful and so complete, I guess. You know, unless you have kryptonite or unless you are really good at magic, you're not going to do anything. It's going to hurt Superman, you know. Batman's the genius and super athlete. Wonder Woman's got the powers of a goddess and all that. Spider-Man can juggle trucks around, but has trouble making his rent on time. You know, Tony Stark is this wonderful inventor, but he's an alcoholic. You know, Daredevil's blind. You know, he added those human elements that I think could make the character more relatable. I think that's one of the other things he did on top of the, you know, the shared universe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and you know, the thing was like, okay, like as much as I love the Fantastic Four, like I loved that book when I was a kid. And then as I got older, I started thinking back on it. And you realize that the Fantastic Four is actually a pretty dysfunctional family.
Oh, yeah.
Because Reed was a workaholic. And Sue, although she is okay, she may not be as smart as Reed, but Sue is super intelligent on her own in her own right. But her relationship with her husband is kind of problematic, and Johnny is a hothead, and Ben is salty because of the way he looks. Yeah. You know, there was a lot of subtext that was going on in that book. Yeah. And, you know, as a kid, like it's almost like when we watched Looney Tunes, like when you watch it as a kid, it's ha-ha, funny, it's all get out. But then you get older, you're like, there's all this other stuff going on that you didn't see. And you're like, how is this actually meant for kids? You know, but good writing does that. Great writing does that. It was, the thing is, like, I always thought that there was going to be a day that I would outgrow comics. You know, I figured, you know, but I've been going back and I've been rereading some of the old stuff. Like, you know, you get those essential collections, you know, so it's like, you know, stuff from the 70s up to, you know, whatever. And as I've been going back and reading some of this stuff, all of a sudden I'm realizing that, you know, that was some really, really well-written stuff that I could read it on one level as a kid. I'm reading it on another level as an adult, and it still means something to me. And I think I don't know if that's what Stan was intending to do, but he managed to create an entire – well, not entire generations of fans for life, you know?
Yeah. I was thinking, like, now, being older with Stan Lee, kids younger than us will know Stan Lee before they know a historical figure. Most of them probably know who Stan Lee is over Teddy Roosevelt.
Yep.
They're so used to seeing him. He's grown up with so many generations of children, and these characters have grown up with, seemed like everybody. Even with Thor, that was out of the box. That was all, because that wasn't even grounded in reality. That was just something him and Kirby made for Norse mythology, because everybody else was doing like the Greek gods and stuff. He decided, let's go somewhere where no one even remembers the Norse mythology, you know, and he just always had that mindset of, what is everyone else doing? What can I do to go left when everyone else is going right?
Oh, and what about how he created Black Panther? Now, like, before the introduction of Black Panther, people pretty much, whenever you thought of Africa, you thought of, you know, you thought of, like, you know, desert and tribes and whatever. But, you know, when you read, oh, man, what was it? Was it Fantastic Four number 38? Something like that?
I think that was his first introduction.
Yeah, so you read that, and you're introduced to an African country that is the most technologically advanced country in the entire world. They don't need the world. They have everything they need and then some. And the king is one of the smartest people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody was doing that back then.
Yeah.
Nobody.
And,
you know?
And when the movie came out, one of the best things, this was last year when the Black Panther movie came out, correct?
It was this year.
Yeah.
It was February this year, yeah.
Oh, man, makes it even more sad. Well, early this year when the movie came out, he was in an interview, Stanley was, and they were asking him about the Black Panther costumes going on for Halloween or whatever. He said he was so happy to see that there's a black character out there now where kids can dress up as him, too, because he said for years he would see black kids dressing up as Captain America, Iron Man, so on and so forth. He said, now I can't wait to see a white kid dress up as a black kid or a black character. And I thought that was really cute.
I got to see that.
That's Stan.
I got to see that at the local library Geek Fest.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this little white kid dressed up like the Black Panther. And oh my God, like, I have to admit, I got the feels a little bit because, you know, that didn't happen for my generation.
Yeah.
You know, that, and you know, to see this kid that, you know, I would have loved to have been the fly on the wall for that conversation. I'm pretty sure the parents are like, okay, cool, because, you know, who doesn't want to be a king, especially right. King of the most powerful, I guess really Wakanda is like the richest nation in the world, at least in the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just keep to themselves, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. So.
It's kind of easy to keep all that money for right now.
Then all that vibranium. So, you know.
Right.
It is one of those things regarding Black Panther. I had said this before. Obviously, I don't want to get sidetracked on anything. But it's wonderful to me that Marvel was able to put all these years of good faith in all of these great movies. Because I think I can say it. They're 25, 20 years ago. Not just because of the massive special effects or anything like that. I don't think Black Panther would have gotten made the way it was 20 or 25 years ago. Oh, it would not have been as fantastic. It would have had the street urban feel to it or something to that effect. I mean, you know, if it was even made, you know?
Yeah. Well, you could almost say 20 years ago, it would have been seen as a good black movie.
Yeah.
Now,
you're right.
It's just a great movie.
Exactly.
It is.
Yes.
Well, yeah, you know, and the thing is like, I remember talking to my mom about this, and she's like, oh, I heard they got a new black superhero. I said, Black Panther isn't new, Mom. He's been around for 50 years. And she goes, what? I said, yeah. He was introduced back in like 68. And my mom's like, well, somebody told me that Marvel created that because they needed a black hero. I said, no, they got plenty of black heroes, Mom. This guy's been around since the 60s. She goes, oh. And the thing was, Marvel waited to make sure that when they were going to introduce Black Panther, that was going to be done right. I mean, because I almost shudder now at the idea. I think like back then at the point, like back in the late 90s, there was talk about Wesley Snipes doing Black Panther. And I think I was all about it because I like just Wesley Snipes kicking people in the face. But
who doesn't
believe that?
Yeah. But if I look at it now, I don't mind that I had to wait 20 years to get Black Panther. I don't mind it, you know? And
I know we've had the movies up, but I'm still waiting for sadly, Stan won't be around to be in that one, but a better Fantastic Four. I know we've had it, but
I'm waiting
to see what Stan's idea was and what Kirby's art would be on screen. We haven't got to see that yet. I think they did perfect with Thor Ragnarok. That's exactly what they imagined got brought live screen. Just you go outside the box. Don't have them on Earth. Do it somewhere else.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I believe that there's enough people. There's enough people who are the gatekeepers that know what it is, know what Stan had in mind. And if and when the time comes and we and Marvel Studios gets to do a Fantastic Four movie, that I want to believe that Stan is going to be up there smiling because it was done right. It was done.
It was
from his page to the screen, you know?
Well,
that's what I want to believe.
One of the other things he did, other than what was exactly in the books, is something that I have not seen since until maybe the 90s a little bit, was he put a human face to comic books because Stan Lee's name is synonymous with Marvel Comics. If you say DC Comics, first thing that comes to your head is usually Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. If you say Image, you think like Spawn and stuff like that. Now, in the 90s, Image Comics... there was a difference because you had Todd McFarlane and Jim Lee and some of these names that became celebrities, but there was also a difference in the way media was done. But back in the 60s when Stan Lee did this, people knew who Stan Lee was from that point forward. The main the mainstream culture knows the name Stan Lee. If you ask just a general person on the street, name a creator from like DC Comics, they're not going to know anything. If you say Marvel, they're going to say Stan Lee. They don't know why, you know, it, but he's always there.
It was because, I mean, it was because I'm like Stan's soapbox and the bullpen bulletin. Like he brought you in, and it was almost like, hey, friend, you know, hey, this is what's going on, you know, this month in Marvel, you know, and it's like, and the way he had a way of communicating with you, and like even as you watch the shows, as you watch Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Anything Marvel related, you heard Stan's voice.
Yeah,
you know, and that was the thing. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, even as you, as you think about, I truth is, I can't as I cannot separate Spider-Man and Stan Lee. You know, I cannot ever, whenever I, if I think of Marvel, I'm thinking of Stan Lee. It doesn't matter how many editor and chiefs there are.
Or publishers.
Or editors and chief, whatever, one of those. but I think of Stan Lee. Like, if whatever happens, and I'll be honest with you, as much as I love the Marvel Max series, there was this part of me is like, would Stan be okay with this? You know, I mean, and, he was long not a part of, well, directly related to Marvel as far as the operations at that point. But I still thought about that.
Oh yeah.
You know.
And I was thinking one reason why he also transcended from generations and generations, and Skin was saying, when you think of DC, like you said, think of the characters. For me, I think because Stan resonated with so many children. They grew up and had kids, and they're like, oh, I know that voice. That's Stan Lee. Then you hear another cartoon in the 80s would come on. Oh, that's Stan Lee's voice. The 90s, you would hear Stan. I remember playing the Spider-Man video game on PlayStation, and Stan Lee didn't make a cameo. His voice did, though. He introduced the very first minute of the video game, and did, if I was seeing his voice or seeing his face, I knew the voice. I'm like, that's Stan Lee. So it's, he just – I think because he stayed around and made sure – people knew who he was, just being iconic for that. And then after a while, how many creators would you see when a movie would come out that would have their name pop up on the logo too? At the end of the movie, you see exclusive producer Stan Lee. And that's something that always resonated with me, from the Punisher movies to the Spider-Man movies to the X-Men movies. Before Marvel had their cinematic universe, the cartoons, I would see that at the very end. He made sure he always kept his hands in there.
Yeah. And I remember reading, I forget what the publication was. Don't know if it was Starlog, but it was one of those geek magazines that you'd have to get at the comic shops because you couldn't get them at the newsstands or at the department stores yet. But I remember an interview with Stan, and this is around the time the first Michael Keaton Batman came out, and Marvel was going forth with a movie division. And they were, you know, this, by the time they were bringing back Hulk for 80s TV movies, and they were talking about doing an X-Men movie. But Stan was saying that he did not want to do Marvel movies just to do Marvel movies. He wanted that measure of control. So he said he wanted to get his name on it as executive producer because he would say in his own words, it means I'm to blame if the movie's no good. You know, I want to have the credit if it's good, or I want to take the blame if it's bad, you know, and that does sound like Stan. You know, if you're going to use his creations, especially you go back to that dreck of a 70s Spider-Man TV show, where it's like Spider-Man is somehow having trouble with street thugs, you know, when he could, you know, like literally just, you know, flick them away with his, you know, with his pinky or something. But
yeah,
you know, I thought it really worked out in the end. I mean, it's obviously easy to say it now, you know, 30 years later, but the fact that he was willing to wait so long before he could finally put his name on it and get things done the way he wanted. And, you know, after all that time, I think it speaks volumes for not just his creativity, but his belief in his way, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, even the thing is, like, Stan is first and foremost a storyteller, you know, and he, it was like I was reading one of his a quote from him, and you know, he talked about how, you know, how some people, you know, he used to be ashamed to say that he was a comic book writer. But you know, because there are people who are doctors and police officers and engineers, but he thought about it. He recognized that what he was doing was good work too, because without entertainment, people would lose their minds.
Oh yeah.
You know, and you know, if what he's doing helps keep people sane and give them, you know, a break from the world, then he's doing good work. And he's done good work, and he's inspired others to do good work. And you know, and his books have done more than just, it's more than just entertainment. I mean, it teaches people, it teaches readers morality. It teaches them tolerance. It teaches them the importance of being open-minded and being understanding. A lot of those things, because a lot of those characters are complex characters, like Dr. Doom. Mm. On one side of it, okay, yeah, you know, he's kind of a jerk, but at the same time, he's a man who loves his country, and he's willing to do whatever it takes to make sure that his country has whatever it needs, and that's something that we all can relate to, you know. And you know, the truth is, like, we can relate to Magneto to a certain degree. Like, you know, okay, Magneto is a little extreme in his the way he wants to know protect, you know, his kind, but I get it, you know. And so, you know, now there are some just straight up bad people, you know, in the Marvel universe, you know, but at the same time, there's a lot of complex characters in there too that kind of make you have to stop and think, like, are they really that bad?
Right.
You know, and I don't think that there were many writers that were doing that at the time.
Yeah, a lot of them were bad for the sake of being bad. But with Stan Lee, I know, like, the new thing is called, a lot of anti-heroes are booming in the early 2000s. But before that, Stan Lee already really had them. It was like Loki, even, for example. If you think about this, if you were an adopted child that never knew he was adopted, couldn't figure out why he wouldn't fit in, can't figure out why the dad would never treat you like he treats the other brother, you grow up and find, I'm adopted. You know what? I don't like you now. You've lied to me. You've treated me bad my whole life. It's like you can understand why he feels this way about his family.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing about Stan Lee, from what I heard after his passing, everyone got on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all these social medias. He really loved his fans.
Yeah,
he really, really loved his fans. There's this one guy talking about, he was at a con, and this was a while ago. Maybe Stan was about 93, maybe a couple years ago. I can't really remember, but he said Stan was sick. Said he was getting really bad at this time. He was just really sick, and they told him he should stay in his hotel room, but he said he'll just be about an hour late. And when he got there, you could still tell he wasn't feeling his best, but once you got up to talk to him, they said he would just be like, hey, how you doing today? How's your day going? It's like, he's on sick. We should be asking you, why'd you come out? But he loved us so much. He, as you said, relatable. Anything he did, he could relate to. And that's one big reason why I think he kept doing that, because he actually talked to people that was buying his material.
Mm-hmm. Man. I mean, how long was he doing those con conventions all over the country, all over the world, really up until just a year ago or so, you know?
Right.
And then I don't think he quit by his choice. He was told, you're not going back out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was gonna say, all these new writers we have out, for example, Todd McFarlane, he went on Spider-Man and he tried to do some stuff like what Stan Lee was doing. And then Frank Miller for The Dark Knight, there's another, well, the one you were talking about a little bit earlier stuff when they were going back and forth at it. Mm-hmm. He's still younger than Stan Lee, but back when he first made The Dark Knight, that's when I heard Stan was like, what are we going to do at Marvel? He's created something new. He's twisted it and got us getting into this gritty world. And then a little while later, he comes over to do Daredevil. Same guy that was there. He didn't want, and it was one of those things, it was competition, but it was friendly competition. He wasn't like, oh, we should be afraid now, we can't do this. How about you just work with the guy, get to know him, make a friend out of him, make some books for you guys, and that's what Stan did.
Yeah, yeah, and even now in more recent years, you know, you will see writers that are working for both Marvel and DC at the same time. You know, one of my favorite writers of current writers is Mark Waid, and he's working for Marvel and DC back and forth like for the last 25 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And well, there's then, a couple. I know, what is it? Ben Acker is actually writing Vertigo right now, but he's also writing Star Wars comics for Marvel.
And that's another thing. I might be wrong, but I personally believe if it wasn't for back in the day when Star Wars was working with Marvel, I don't know if Disney would have really been the perfect lineup for acquiring Lucasfilms, because it's like they already had some sort of deal built in there somewhere.
Right.
With the comic books, and now we're getting great. I think the books are just getting better and better as the years go by. Sometimes I personally like the Star Wars reads more than I do some of the new films right now.
Well, when they brought Star Wars over, back was that must have been what 77, 78,
yeah.
And so, you know, the thing was, all you had at that point was one movie.
They didn't even have that. And the first Star Wars book actually came out before the movie was released. That's why it looks so different than the movie.
Yeah, it did. So
because they only had, you know, concept stuff.
I remember the name. I think it was Howard Chaykin. I think did the art for that. And if I recall correctly, it's not something he is very chomping at the bit to talk about that point in his career. But
no, and which I met Howard Chaykin at the same convention that I met Steranko at. Chaykin is so cool. If you get an opportunity, meet the man, talk to him. He's awesome. But I digress. So the thing was, because Marvel did some, they did some creative things with the Star Wars property, considering we didn't get Empire to what, 80, 81?
Yeah, 80, I believe.
So in essence, what we ended up with were, I feel is, the beginnings of the expanded universe, because you know I don't know if George Lucas had a Bible for them to go by, but the truth is we only had the one point. We only have one movie, and so you know they took that, and Marvel took that and said, okay, let's run with it. And you know what? I'll be honest with you. One of my personal favorite, well, you know, my favorite movies of all time is Buckaroo Banzai. And the Marvel Comics had the comic adaptation. I can't say Stan was directly related to that, but still, it was Marvel. But Stan did write the lyrics to, what was it? You remember the show Defenders of the Earth?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the lyrics.
We're probably going to be talking about that in an upcoming Lesser Known Geek Hall of Fame episode, just for what it's worth.
Oh, you know what, dude? I would love to be on that because loved that show. And
you cosplay as one of the guys.
Yeah, I did. I cosplayed as Lothar at Con on the Cob. And so Stan Lee wrote the lyrics to the theme for that show.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah. So, you know, Stan, well, we can say he was a writer, but, you know, technically he was a songwriter too. So there you go. You know,
he was a great writer.
You know, that guy was everywhere doing everything, it feels like it, you know? I don't know.
Well, one other thing I think I wanted to talk about here, and then we can kind of go with how it flows. You know, everybody, I think, is probably going to have their favorite group of Stan Lee cameos over the years. Yeah. And the one I think that will always and forever be my favorite wasn't even for a Marvel movie, and I think you may know the one that I'm thinking of, and that's the appearance that he made in Mallrats, where
when he had the beard
down Brody and get him to reconcile with his girlfriend, and he makes up this whole story about how he had this girl, because obviously we know, you know, Stan was married to the same woman for 70 years, but he had this whole thing of, you know, Dr. Doom was like this dark version of himself because he felt so bad because of the one that got away. And, you know, and the Hulk just turning to mean and nasty because that's what he felt like because of the one that got away. So it's, you know, the heart of the movie, but that's also, I think, very much like a story that Stan might have written, that he would have the person who you can understand where they're coming from. I mean, Dr. Doom is an example. What does Dr. Doom want more than anything else in the world? He wants to save the soul of his mother.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Who can't relate to that? You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's why that cameo will always be my favorite, because it seemed like it was the most like Stan. Like if you were to ever meet Stan in real life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys had a favorite or not, but.
I totally do, but it's only because it's so not Stan. But his cameo in is it the first Deadpool movie where he's the DJ in the
yes
club. yeah because that's so not Stan, but that's like my favorite one of his. That's like my favorite one because I, you know. Like some of the cameos, you just kind of know what to expect. Like, is he a guy in the street? Is he a guy, is he, you know, driving a bus or whatever? But I did not expect to see him, you know. Although, is it Avengers? The one where he's in the casino?
That was Black Panther, actually.
Black Panther, yeah. Okay. Although I did like that one too. So apparently my favorite ones are ones where Stan is not a very Stan situation.
Well,
I just couldn't see him doing that, but that's just me.
Then you have the one from, what was it? Guardians 2, where it's the most meta Stan cameo ever, where he's actually a watcher explaining the way the universe works.
He's visiting the other watchers. Yeah.
explaining the way this universe works. But I know for me, my favorite memories of Stan would have to still go back to just all of his appearances, and especially the 80s animated series and stuff. The stuff that, like I said, he was the first face I ever had to comic books. And it wasn't even his face. It was his voice, knowing that this guy actually writes the books. And you see him, I get to watch the shows every week with him on it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it still goes back. I have two. The one I mentioned earlier was when, like I said, when he was on the Spider-Man animated series. Just hearing him, it's so weird hearing a creator dive into the reality that, dive into reality that they made from the characters, and you could relate to Spider-Man so much. He actually put himself in the situation of, if this character really came to life, how would I act? And that's what he was showing. Then the second one was one Ken mentioned for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. It was like a theory going around on the internet for so long. Is Stan Lee a watcher? He's in like every single Marvel movies and every single animated series and video games. Is he actually a watcher? And then it turns out he's actually not a watcher, but he's someone that the Watchers sent out to go back to them. Like, what are we missing?
Right.
And he's actually the same character in every, he's Stan Lee in everything. That Stan Lee is Stan Lee. I'm like, this is awesome. That one was probably my, those two were my favorites, because like he just put himself as his real self in these, this world that he made up, but still could relate to these characters so much. Is like, why would I change myself and make myself a character? I am the character. Like it, that, I just thought that was really awesome of the creator and the character. So, yeah, Stan was awesome.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us probably have the memories, at least what I remember, that with stuff in the '80s when he might appear as a caricature of himself, you know, for the Stan soapbox or whatever. And he looked the most like some of those pictures of him in the '70s where there was still some dark in his hair and he'd have black mustache and the silver aviator sunglasses. And he'd have like that tan leather jacket, like looking like he just stepped right out of a seventies exploitation movie. You
know? Yes. But do you remember that one picture of him that was showing up in like all the Marvel comics of him in a, it was, it looked like Doctor Strange's cape. It like that, and it was weird because, like, you know, looking back on it, it was cool. It looked like it might have been at a Marvel party or some type, but it for the longest time seemed like almost every issue of Marvel comics I would read, you see this picture of Stan in this huge Doctor Strange looking cape. And so at times I pictured that whenever I think of Stan Lee, that's how I pictured him, like wearing Doctor Strange's cape, you know. Or I guess technically it was a cloak, but you know what I mean. It's a cloak of levitation, but yeah.
When you, Seth, when you're talking about when you stepped off of the explanation movies, you guys, well, this is one of my favorite quotes from Stan Lee, just that made me laugh. This is one of the few things where I'm like, this is Stan Lee not being Stan Lee. But in real life, he's usually just the, you know, he has these quick comebacks and stuff when he's roasting people or whatever. Or, but this one, I was just like, I can't believe Stan said that. Someone asked him, you guys probably know where I'm going with this. They asked him, what does he think about these digital comic books? And he said,
yes!
You know, they're not bad. Let me put you like this. Boobs look great on the internet, but it's better to have a real one in your hand.
Like, yes! Yeah. I love
Stan.
I was this close to sharing that. I'm like, no, I'm going to be nice. But, dude, that's like my favorite Stan Lee quote because it's so true. I couldn't believe Stan said it. And I'm like,
I couldn't either. I was like, wait, did Stan put this out or someone just put that together as a meme? No, he really said that.
And I think about that whenever I open Marvel Unlimited. And I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah, I, but, you
it's
know,
not the same. And I love Marvel Unlimited. Just I can't afford those books back in the day. They are expensive.
Yeah. You know, now you know, you wait 6 months, you get an entire library of them. But I guess technically it's not the same as. Although, you know, they've been reprinting some of these books, classic books called with the True Believers line, and that makes me think about Stan Lee too, because Stan Lee, whenever he was, you know, started a show, he said hello True Believers, and you're like, and so I had the opportunity to read Daredevil number one, and I'm reading this, and you know, the thing was, okay, Matt Murdock is blind. All right, and he has these extraordinary abilities, true. But, you know, Stan Lee did something else with Matt, and it was something that has carried on through whoever else wrote the books. Matt is smug. like Matt is cocky. And who would think about making a blind man cocky? But Stan would. And, you know, and he was cocky for several reasons, but a lot of people just took it as him, as Matt being Matt. Mm-hmm. And that was something that was like, as a kid, I loved the idea of a blind man that was able to hand out beatdowns. But mind you, I loved watching Kung Fu because of Master Po. But when Daredevil first came on the scene, blind people weren't, you didn't see blind people like that. You know,
I'm saying, I know this is little. I don't think Stan Lee didn't have a big hand in the Deadpool character himself, but because of what he did with Charles Xavier was in the wheelchair, as we said, Daredevil being blind. I feel like a lot of people overlook this character, but Deadpool has cancer. That's something a lot of people deal with. It's a big issue people deal with for people that know someone in their family. And once again, it's like, oh, I don't know about this blind guy that's going to be able to do all this. You can't do this, but hey, it's empowering. Same for Deadpool. A lot of people that do have cancer, it's like, hey, I might not be able to do this, but this is empowering. If I could do this, this is awesome. You could always relate. And I also feel like the Hulk was another big one that gets overlooked. Stan Lee made him. How many people you know have temper tantrums? They have these anger issues. Then the whole Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing, the whole schizophrenia stuff. Like, there's the picture.
Is that the picture you're talking about?
That's the picture, yeah, yeah.
And yep, the rest of it. That's that image I was talking about, looking like a exploitation movie or something like that. I'll have to put that in the show notes.
That's what I would picture that. And I've been I've been thinking about that image more often than not in the last couple of days. But yeah,
that's actually it says it's Stan Lee with Captain Sticky at the 1975 San Diego Comic-Con. Captain Sticky drove a bubble topped Lincoln car with flags and flashing lights.
Oh my God! Yeah, Stan was a character.
Yeah, and another thing, talking about those characters that you might not think of having the hero or other aspects to them. You know, Tony Stark. Now, granted, a character like Bruce Wayne existed before, but here's Tony Stark, the epitome of that corporate America. You know, big business. You know, billionaire, all that thing. You know, I can make the obvious analogies, but I won't. And they make him the good guy, you know?
Yeah.
And on top of that, he was tied to Vietnam. You remember, he was in, Stark Industries was making weapons at that point, and he was visiting the troops or testing a weapon or whatever when all that stuff happened. And that was in Vietnam. Now, he kind of went there.
Yeah. He did. Well, this is another topic, but the Punisher and the Fantastic Four get tied in there. Now, I know we have Wonder Woman and Superman for, like, back in the day, the big heroes that didn't wear a mask, but at the same time, they still have secret identity. With the Fantastic Four, it's like, I'm Reed Richards, I'm Ben Grimm, I'm Susan and Johnny Storm. Frank Castle just didn't care. He lost his family. He doesn't care if anyone sees his face or not. I remember when they can't. Now, Stanley, I don't think, created that version of Punisher. There was another Punisher years before, but he was like a one-off character. Yeah. But they said that name we can reuse and rebrand it. And someone brought the idea to Stan. They were drawing these masks of a skull, and he was like, wait a minute. Don't put a mask on him. From his background of what you're telling me, he doesn't need one. And that was something I thought was really innovative, because a lot of characters, if they didn't have a secret identity or a mask, a lot of people felt like they couldn't relate to him. But it's like Stan was like, I feel like he'll probably be more relatable, because if you're on this path like this, you don't care if no one knows your face or who you are or not. You just have a goal, and you just want to set out for that goal.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a little bit of info that a lot of fans might not know. The Punisher actually started out as an antagonist. He started out as a bad guy.
Yeah. He was trying to... He's trying to kill Spider-Man. That was his whole thing. He's hired. Who was that guy? Was he the Goblin?
Green Goblin?
It was the Jackal that hired Punisher.
The Jackal. He went.
I have the issue.
I was like, we'll get it eventually. He hired him to kill Spider-Man because he thought he was a bad guy, but he was like, no, he's not a bad guy. He's actually a good guy. You're the bad guy.
Right.
So.
Man, yeah.
All right. Well, anything else you guys wanted to bring up before we wrap things up here?
I think we covered it pretty good. I mean, Stan was amazing. And I don't care what comics you read or if you're a comic fan or not, everybody knows the name Stan Lee. And somehow he touched just a little bit of everybody.
Oh, yeah. And it was amazing to see all these actors post tweets about how they're going to miss him. It's like, I'm pretty sure they've met him just because of where he is in life, but it's insane to see how much of an influence he had on not just people like us, but people that are in Hollywood right now.
Yeah.
Everyone knew Stan and loved Stan. He's going to be missed.
Yeah. I really don't have anything to add. It's just, I have a blog that I write every week, and you know, I'm going to share some, you know, some of my thoughts and everything, but I don't know, man. There's a void right now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It is one of those times where there's those names that it hits a little harder outside of family, of course, family or friends.
Yeah.
And somebody goes, it just, it's going to hurt a little bit more than usual. And I know for me, it's people like, you know, Tom Baker or Mark Hamill or Harrison Ford or some of those icons, you know, and Stan is definitely on that list for me. But for our listeners, obviously, this has been Geekville Radio. You can find us at geekvilleradio.com. All of our social media is under Geekville Radio. You can actually post on our website through the social media engine of your choice, or find us on Facebook and Twitter. Let us know if you have any favorite Stan Lee moments or any sayings or stories or anything like that. Now we'll go around the horn here. Ken, we'll start with you again. If people are hearing you for the first time, where can they hook up with your shows and find out what you're up to?
Well, I'll hit the two that, GeekWatch One. If you go to GeekWatch1.com, you'll find everything for us. Spell out the word one, not just the number. Or all social media, we're just GeekWatch1 and GeekWatch1@gmail.com. I'm also on Wookiee Radio at WookieRadio.net. You can hit me up either one. They're both weekly shows. I'll leave the other ones for Vernon and Kylan. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, if he keeps going on, he's got to cover both of us.
That's why... Kylan's is all on all him.
Well, you can find me at GeekWatch One, or I'm also a co-host on Mighty Marvel Geeks. We're on Sorcerer Radio, and we're also part of the Weeby Geeks Network. Pretty much, if you go to your search engine, you type in Mighty Marvel Geeks, you'll find us, and check out all our shows. And I will definitely be talking about Stan and Man this week. I'm certain of that.
Oh yeah, I think we're going to go over a little bit too. For us, you can find us on our DC Superpowers podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Superpowers DC, on Instagram and Facebook. We are also DC Superpowers podcast. If you Google us, you can find our website. Just Google us, Ken. Just type in DC Superpowers Podcast. You'll find us. Mm-hmm. And DC Superpowers Podcast at gmail.com. I think that covers all of us for our plugs. Also.
Yeah, I've definitely popped in and worked a bit for DC Superpowers shows, you know, when I can.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, we need to do this again for another topic. I know this is what I would say is a downer episode, but I have fun just talking about Stan with you guys. So if we could do this again with any other topic, I wouldn't mind it.
Oh, yeah.
Hook back up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think I was about to say, Ken, I think the last time we did a show together was almost 2 years ago. So let's not let it be another 2 years before we do another show together.
I think it broke down into a lot of wrestling talk, actually.
Oh, I wish I could have been on that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, that's going to wrap it up here for this edition of Geekville Radio. We'll be getting back into a normal rotation after before too long. So thank you, folks, for listening, and we will talk to you folks again next time. Geekville Radio is not sponsored or endorsed by any products or services unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the hosts and or guests do not reflect the views of GeekvilleRadio.com, the Wrestling Brethren podcast, family, or any of their affiliates. Some media used in Geekville Radio is the product of their respective copyright holders, all rights reserved.